Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? The world running on EVs and renewable energy? Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by a number of folks in the leadership of Delgado Community College. They play an incredible role in our city on so many different fronts. And the chancellor of Delgado Community College, Larissa Littleton-Stibe, joins us, as well as the associate vice chancellor for student affairs, Tamika Duplessis, and the associate vice chancellor for academic affairs, Harold Gaspard. Chancellor, let's start with you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. So excited to be here, and the Delgado team is all here. How are you?
I am doing fine. I guess I should tell folks that only because of you, I've agreed to be belittled, made fun of, and roasted at the Delgado event on March the 28th. Michael Heck will be emceeing the event, and yeah. We are building that at the present time, and I look forward to it. I guess it'll be a lot of fun.
Let me tell you, it is always a fun time, and we are honored to have you. Thank you for putting yourself out there, but look, it will be a great night.
Absolutely. I will just end this segment by saying, be nice to me.
We will. You are a friend. Yeah, we will.
So let's talk about it. The opportunity right now is great, is perfect. Here we stand, January 9th. School registration will be starting, I think, on the 18th for you guys out at Delgado. Why Delgado?
So let me tell you. So the 18th, January 18th, is actually the first day of class. That's Saturday. Saturday, January 18th is the first day of class. So you still have time to register. So this Saturday, we will have what is called Super Saturday. For those individuals who, you know, are on the fence about college or what have you, can come out. We have everyone there, financial aid, admissions, the deans, department chairs for all of the programs at the college. So registration is actively going on right now as we speak. We are actively enrolling, registering students for our spring semester, which starts January 18th. But Saturday is a special day because it allows individuals to come out and really see what we have to offer and take that final step.
Absolutely. And so many different options. When I first started looking at the curriculum that's offered there, I mean, the list goes on. And on and on mm-hmm. and on. Mm-hmm. If you can't find something that tickles your fancy in that list, you have no interest.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. You know, we are number one in the state, and I will go as far as to say in the country as it relates to our nursing and allied health programs. We produce, you go to any hospital, 90% of the staff at any hospital is a Delgado Community College student that's working there now. When it comes to accounting, when it comes to marketing, when it comes to biotechnology, chemistry, the list just goes on and on, technology. Delgado is at the forefront of those programs. And very often, business and industry partners look to us to create the curriculum, to create the programs, and they have a seat at our table driving us, telling us what it is they need in terms of the workforce. So we do what we can. We do our best. We offer courses morning, evening, weekend. We have the flexibility that's there because we know that our students, most of them are working full time, and so they are attending part time. But we do have that student who is a full time student as well, who may not be working. So we have to cater to a varying demographic, and with that, we have various locations. And you know, our graduates don't need much orientation to start work because it's already embedded in the curriculum and what we provide to them.
Let's talk about this in a little bit more of a granular level and bring in Dr. Tamika Duplessis, Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs. I was simply amazed at, as the Chancellor just outlined, how many opportunities and how many different ways there is to become a student at Delgado. And it's much broader than just the traditional semester approach, right?
Yes, so a couple of things. So we are, and first of all, good morning.
Good morning to you.
So we are an open admissions academic institution. And for us, that means you don't need a high school diploma to enter into our college. We have a variety of different pathways into our college through our adult education program. In terms of opportunities, there are just so many. We have an easy enrollment process. We have one application for admissions. We have one application that connects students to all of our scholarships. It is just a simple process, and our goal is to help get students in and put them on the road to success.
Now, the semester, the spring semester term runs from the 18th, as the Chancellor just pointed out, and runs through Tuesday, May 13th. But you have other opportunities during this semester, both a 12-week and 8-week and holiday programs as well.
So that speaks to our flexibility. Dr. Stein mentioned that we are flexible, and that also means in terms of offering classes and days and times and methods that will help students achieve the maximum amount of success they can. So we do have the traditional 16-week semester that is our full spring semester. We also have a 12-week semester that allows students to do a little bit more in a shortened time frame. We also have 2 8-week sessions that run along our 16-week. We have an 8-week session at the beginning of our 16-week and one at the end, offering the most flexible opportunities for our students to get involved and get the training that they need when they need it.
So session one for the 8-week option, for the benefit of the listening audience, is January 21st through March 18th, and then session two goes from March 19th to May 14th. Because Correct. A lot of folks work, they work seasonally, they're doing different things, and that's what I love about this. It's just so many different ways to stay engaged.
I agree. We pride ourselves on meeting our students where they are so that we deliver the education that they need to help them succeed.
Yeah. So the registration events, you have some going on today. Also, January 11th will be Super Saturday at the City Park campus from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then January 13th, an opportunity from 1 to 7 p.m. at the City Park campus. The 14th through the 16th, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. on the City Park campus. And the 17th, from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on the City Park campus as well. All of this information is available at dcc.edu, right?
Yes, all that information for is available on our website. We have an events calendar at the bottom. And, you know, we are often open during this time, late hours, to make sure that we serve that working adult or that working parent that needs that extra push after hours.
So let's talk briefly about the academic programs. I pulled out the fact sheet that is given out by Delgado. I saved it at an event that I went to, and it's just like three columns of opportunities. And we'll bring in the Associate Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs, Harold Gaspard. Harold, if you would, tell us about some of the highlights of some of the programs that are offered by Delgado.
Well, as you stated, we do have a large number of programs that run the gamut. It's from, from Allied Health, which is one of our, and nursing, which is, of course, our largest school, and goes all the way down to the technical areas, technical areas of welding and so forth for those areas. So we pretty much meet every area of need. But our pride and joy, I think, is right now is the Allied Health and nursing arena, those schools. Allied Health itself has 30 different programs. And as Chancellor Stein said, when you get sick, you will run into a Delgado graduate. You have no choice. But because of the numbers of programs that we offer and the different specialties. Now, remember, we go to the two-year level. We don't train at the requirement of a four-year level and so forth. But certainly that the two-year and certificate levels is primarily what hospitals hire. It's you have the higher level specialists, but for instance, anesthesia and so forth, those are at and pharmacists that are at the doctorate level. But we're at the worker level, and these are great jobs. We have some very unique programs. Speaking of Allied Health, we have four programs that are very unique to the state. No other programs in the state are offered. So we draw students from the north as well as the western part of the state for those programs to try to meet the needs. However, we know we still have a lot of openings, and we don't have enough students to fill all of our positions for some of these professions. Many professions they don't know we offer, or they don't exist. That's really a primary problem that we sort of have. Students want to be a doctor or a nurse, and every person that you see in a hospital with a white dress on is a nurse, but that's not necessarily true. And same thing with a male. It's not, they're not doctors. They're are technologists and technicians and doing the job that they trained for. So, that's would encourage your listening audience to come by and visit with us and see if you would see our labs and you may have visited them. They are just absolutely first class. I can say one, our diagnostic medical sonography, ultrasound. If you walk into that lab, actually we have people from the hospitals that will come by and tour it and leave with envy because of the high quality type of equipment that we are training our students on. So it's nothing short of excellent, really, in just about every single program that we have. We've been very fortunate to get funding, special funding, for these equipments, and especially in our newer building for Allied Health and Nursing, and it's really served us very, very well. And also with this type of training, every program has a practicum part. We do send the students out into the facilities, so they get hands on with actual patients. And they mark as students, of course. You're not. We don't put them in as fake employees, but certainly. It's a good experience for them. Now, past Allied Health, we have a tremendous number of other areas. Business is a big, big area for us. They run many, many different programs. It's one of our larger schools for graduates, as well as in the STEM area. We have a science lab technology program, which those are the guys that are the people that help in the research area, which is a super, super new. It's a relatively new program, but very, very exciting, and one that is really explosive to Delgado, and there's nothing else around at our level. And also as cyber security, which is huge now. You know, that's really something that is really very, very important to us in our society nowadays. So that's one that's a well-kept secret for us also. And in the other areas, you know, we have the transfer degree. You know, a student could come here for 2 years and guarantee to transfer to a four-year school. You know, we're a lot less expensive than a four-year school, but they are by the Board of Regents guaranteed to, if they follow the correct curriculum, of course, but they're guaranteed to transfer. You know, they could go 2 years here, go to transfer to UNO, Tulane, Loyola, wherever, and they can attend for 2 years, come out with an advanced degree, no problems there whatsoever. So, you know, we have the paralegal program that's quite popular for us and a big need. It's something that a lot of students will come for, as well as the policing. You know, I'm at a loss now. We have so many. But, yeah.
You know what I found, if I could interrupt you for 1 second, what I found interesting, like in your School of Business, I mean, there's really practical courses that are being provided if you are like a sole proprietor, right? Like QuickBooks, you know, and other right. other things about retail management, also, real estate. So there's these specialized classes that touch any number of disciplines that you may need to learn something about it as a sole proprietor of a business. It's there. And that's what's pretty amazing to me, that you're able to take advantage of that in so many different fronts. And I did want to say, before we moved from Allied Health, but I didn't want to interrupt you because you were on a roll, Harold, but oldest nursing program in the state with a 100-year history of producing exceptional graduates and nationally recognized for excellence as well. There were so many things about, as I learned about Delgado, that I never knew. And it was very interesting to learn about all of these different things, and second largest university in the state, for example. And there's all these little tidbits. So if folks have an interest, there's a number of intriguing things about what's actually going on at Delgado. And Harold, we're running out of time, and I did want to give the chancellor the final say. So Chancellor Stieb, final thoughts.
Final thoughts is, look, I always say this, and I will continue to say it. This is not your grandfather's community college. Delgado Community College is innovative. We're forward-thinking. You know, there's so much talk about the workforce and where New Orleans is going and where the state is going. You need Delgado Community College. Delgado is at the forefront. We are looking at the numbers in terms of, Harold mentioned, positions that are available in hospitals, and individuals don't know that those positions are available. It's incumbent upon us to inform individuals and to train for that need, to skill for that need, to educate for that need. If Louisiana, if New Orleans is going to be the powerhouse that it has to be, bringing companies here, luring business and industry to this state, Delgado Community College has to play a major role. And I have just the team to do just that. We are boots on the ground. We have a pulse on what's happening in this economy. And we're doing everything we can to ensure that when students come to Delgado Community College, that we are flexible, that we are nimble, that we can meet their needs.
Absolutely, folks. And you see what I'm talking about. You can't tell this lady no. It's not a possibility. Well, folks, thank y'all so much for joining. It doesn't work well. thank y'all so much for joining us. Chancellor of Delgado Community College, Larissa Littleton Stieb, as well as Harold Gasport, Associate Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs, and Dr. Tamika Tublesis, Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs. Best of luck in the spring semester, and thank you so much for providing the information to our listening audience today. We appreciate saying.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back, folks. We are trying to connect up with the Louisiana Attorney General, Liz Murrell. She'll be calling in shortly, hopefully. On the text line, your guests are so well-spoken this morning. I'm very impressed with the Delgado representatives. And another text says, Delgado sure has grown since I was considering it in 1981. And they also, another text coming in saying, do they have programs for seniors? They have programs for everyone. You want to go to dcc.edu. I think you are going to be almost overwhelmed with the number of offerings that they have, almost everything that you can think about. Someone says, do they provide training for flying drones? They might. I might have to go back to the list and see. I would be surprised if they did not, because they are in just about every discipline out there. And it's been great interacting with the folks over at Delgado there. I have to tell you, I was completely and totally ignorant, I guess, of all of the offerings, the economic impact that Delgado has on our community, and all of the things that they're involved in. And historically, so many nationally recognized programs there. I mean, they score very well in national ratings as it relates to their output of students and in the workforce, and have talked to so many business leaders that partnered up with Delgado in creating programs to make it seamless as they graduate from their two-year courses into the workforce. And a lot of positive things about it. And it's kind of why we highlight Delgado and really appreciate them partnering up with us to do so. Because as you talk to business folks, what you find is this strong connection and belief that without a vibrant, alive, and well community college system, your community is otherwise less than. And you hear that over and over and over again. Okay, we why don't we get to a break, Coleman, and we'll try and connect up with Louisiana Attorney General Liz Murrell, get the latest on the upgrading of security in the French Quarter, and obviously the scope of the investigation to be conducted by the Attorney General's office. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Louisiana's Attorney General Liz Murrell. Liz, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Newell. It's great to be with you.
So, General, obviously you have, first let me say Happy New Year, but you have been extraordinarily busy since the first minute of the new year, and we all know why. If you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, maybe talk about what brought you to the point that you felt that your office should conduct an investigation of the happenings of the early morning hours and the terrorist attack on Bourbon Street.
Well, there's obviously a, you know, demand and a need for answers to a lot of questions. And, you know, I feel like that there needs to be a broad, methodical evaluation of a lot of different things, including how money is being spent, who's on first, who's on second, you know, what, who should be, you know, how many people are involved in planning and security planning in New Orleans, not just for this event, but for other events. And how does that work? I mean, that's all kind of a backward looking analysis so that we can make sure that we're looking at some structural issues
and seeing what needs to change in the future. And so I guess I just felt like we needed to do that at the state level. And I know there is, you know, certainly some interest in the local by the local city council and things like that. But, you know, they've been there all along. And I think that the country needs answers and the state needs answers. And I still think that some arm's length from being an elected city official is useful.
Right. I mean, that degree of separation of your office from what actually goes on down in the city of New Orleans, I think provides a lot of comfort for folks knowing that you're going to have a look-see into this matter.
Yeah, it's just, you know, less of a personal investment and decisions that were made and how they were made. You know, I'm not going into this with any kind of preconceived conclusions or ideas of where it's going to end. I do, you know, have an idea of how I want to kind of start gathering information and evaluating who was involved in the actual planning, not just this year, but last year, the year before. You know, I want to look at this in a pretty deep dive so that we can see where the dysfunction is and the function and kind of see what needs to change. We've seen a lot of changes put in place right now, but that is also some of that stuff's going to go away. I mean, the federal resources are going to revert back to a more normal level. They may come in and surge for certain events, but we have a lot of things going on in New Orleans all the time. And so we kind of have to look at this with a fresh attitude towards security in New Orleans. And, you know, you might share this feeling. I mean, we feel like it's a small town, but it's not. You know, we bring people in, people come into New Orleans from all over the world, certainly all over the country. It's a huge convention destination. They come because they get such a embraced feeling and a community feeling, and they just love that about New Orleans. And so there's some resistance to change that would affect the culture and the what we love about the kind of core that drives people to want to come here. And so I think we have to keep an eye on preserving what's important and why people come, but we also have to make sure they're safe when they do. And we've had police surge in state police there, and that's been helpful. But, you know, we've got to look at things like the consent decree and whether it's actually performing any good purpose there. I have been very critical of it. I think we should be narrowing it and or terminating it instead of perpetuating it. And yet here we are with, consent orders on deck right now that expand it.
Yeah, that's troubling to hear that on so many different fronts. So you're comfortable right now with the scope that you think that this is going to take? It seems to me that we have, I think the chief is going to announce Bill Bratton as the expert that she desires to have a look-see here. She mentioned yesterday that the Louisiana State Police is going to be hiring their own expert. I have to imagine that you've probably given some thought about hiring one as well.
Well, I don't want to recreate the wheel. You know, I think that if those people have access to all the information that they need to be able to do a thorough job, and they're free to kind of really be doing a deep dive and looking at it, then I may get the information they're getting and meet with them and talk with them. You know, I certainly will work with state police in that regard. And I would expect, you know, the city has pledged, both the mayor and the chief have pledged to be supportive of this review. And we'll see kind of which direction it takes us. But I don't need necessarily, I mean, we don't necessarily need to have 10 experts from 10 different basically parties coming in. I mean, that takes up a lot of time. And it will take up a lot of the chief's time. It'll take up a lot of their top brass's time. They have to also, we don't want to create the very problem that I'm concerned already existed. And that is that they were paying attention to a lot of other things instead of, you know, that they were being dragged in a lot of different directions and not being able to focus on their core mission.
Thank you for that, because I think that's a slippery slope. And unfortunately, a lot of times these things get away from us, right? Or they can get away from us.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we need to be efficient in how we do it, but we also need to be thorough in how we're doing it. I don't think this should be a process that anybody is going into, whether it's the police department, the state police, or me, or the city council for that matter, or, you know, Oliver Thomas, if he's doing his own review. I mean, I don't think any of us, anybody who wants to look at what happened, should be going into it with an eye toward either attacking some individual or justifying their own behavior. You know, I mean, I think that what happened was terrible. And I do believe that there were vulnerabilities, and that if this individual had not been able to access the point that he did access, there were other places he could have caused an awful lot of harm. So that doesn't mean that we don't look at that vulnerability and make sure that but we got to look at all of it, because we don't usually see the same exact thing happen twice. Like, the next time is going to be something else. And so we don't want to just look at that particular spot in Bourbon Street when we've got 15 other or 1500 other things that somebody could exploit.
I mean, my suspicion is going to be that the governance structure got in the way of operational efficiencies and we didn't execute. And we've seen that over and over and over again in local and state government across this country. And I'm glad to hear that your approach is, you know, this really isn't about finding a scapegoat. This is about remediating these friction points and these works and processes during the decision making process to streamline it, make sure that things get done when they need to get done.
That's right. I mean, you know, I kind of have the attitude that, like, everybody needs to step up their game. And mm-hmm. So let's go figure out how to make that happen.
No, absolutely. I mean, and that's typically where you see, you know, a breakdown somewhere in a particular work in process where someone's not doing what they're supposed to do, and it impacts everything upstream and downstream in many cases. Do you anticipate that your review, obviously an investigation, will lead to a final report? And is that something that you intend to share, obviously, with the city, the mayor, and others?
I do expect there to be a report. I'm not promising, but I'm anticipating that I'd like to have some preliminary analysis that I can put out and share before the legislative session goes in. I think there are certain aspects of this that are just going to take a lot more time. Auditing, or, you know, and I use that term kind of broadly, but looking at how money was spent and how departments function and work, and looking at this from a multi-year standpoint, that's going to take more time. And I think that, you know, I certainly expect this to take at least through the end of the year before I believe I'm satisfied that we're done and ready to issue something. And it could take longer than that, but I would like to update that report periodically so that I can report out. There may be some aspects of it that have to be confidential. I've never thought it was a great idea to publish your vulnerabilities on the internet. I think that if there are vulnerabilities that have been changed and they are no longer a vulnerability for us, then I have no problem talking about it. I'll have to balance that and see whether there are some things that need to be kept confidential. And operationally, there may be things that we have changed and we just don't want to publicize what and how it's changed. On the other hand, anything that's visible publicly, and you're going to see it, a barrier or something out on the street, I mean, you know, that's not private information. Everybody can see it.
Yeah, it is what it is. You mentioned the legislature. Right. Are you trying to preserve the right that there may be the necessity for some legislative enactments in order to ensure that certain things happen?
Sure. Yeah, I think that, you know, there definitely could be legislation. I'm not ready to say what I think it might be, but I think that there probably will be some.
And I think the council is kind of grappling with that same thing as to whether or not there's going to be, you know, the possibility of charter amendments or ordinances. It would seem to me, and what I'm hearing you say, is that really your final report, recommendations or otherwise, would be devoid of whoever is the mayor, right? It doesn't matter. It's not about individual. It's about a process, right?
No, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, I think that we got to look at what was the situation on the ground, and if it looked like it was kind of driven by one individual, then, or two individuals or something, then that would certainly be part of it. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think that it is more about process. Certainly the way I'm going into it is to look at it that way. I'm looking at it somewhat the same way I did when I looked at the ankle monitoring situation. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of people that are involved, and I can't control even some of those branches of government or necessarily influence them as heavily. For example, you know, the juvenile court judges have their own, you know, system. They do certain things. I have to rely on the court system and their kind of management structure to be able to influence those judges. I couldn't directly do that. There are other aspects of it that involve the Office of Juvenile Justice and the city, where I have more of an ability to influence how they're doing things. And I've just been looking at it in a very detailed way. And I've been trying to come up with potential legislative fixes that would help resolve some of the gaps in the process and ensure that we actually have a functional system. So same concept.
Yeah. Final thoughts?
Just that the whole event continues to weigh heavily, I think, on everybody's hearts and minds. And there are a lot of people, including myself, who are committed to making some changes so that we are stronger and safer. You know, it's a big city. All of our cities, we want to live in a free country. I think we have to preserve freedom, and we have to be willing to kind of not live our lives in fear. But we also need to do what we can to avoid known risk. And I know that everybody I've talked to is committed to doing that. So I do have some optimism and confidence that we will end up in a better place after, you know, we just all got to kind of hunker down and keep working at it and not lose sight of that vision.
Well, thank you so much for what you do. And thank you so much for sharing this with us. I know a lot of folks really wanted to hear from you, and we appreciate you joining us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me. Anytime. I'll come on anytime.
Thank you, ma'am. The Attorney General of the great state of Louisiana, Liz Murrell. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us. Interesting conversation with the Attorney General of the state of Louisiana, Liz Murrell, saying that this is obviously there was a demand and a need for this type of investigation, a degree of separation from the officials within the city government, obviously, and a broad and a methodical evaluation. She likened it to the way that she looked at the electronic monitoring system. And the outcome of that, I thought, was very productive. And it sounds to me like she really wants to get to the bottom of this, right? And that's a good thing, because right now we have a bunch of different conventions in town. We've got big conventions about to come to town. We've got the Super Bowl 31 days out, and Mardi Gras right on the heels of the Super Bowl celebration here. And the list goes on and on and on, as she pointed out, right? And I think this needs to be resolved. The state has made a significant investment from a security standpoint here, and obviously will always be standing up folks here in the city of New Orleans, not to mention the fact that the state has a number of assets within the French Quarter as well, number of museums and alike. So there obviously is an interest from that perspective as well. So we will wait to see how this plays itself out. I, for one, feel good about the Attorney General, Liz Murrell, looking into this. I think that she that brings an unjaded perspective here. It is what it is, and we're just it will document where these processes are, what they are, how they are, whether that seems to be good, bad, or anything else. And it seems as though a lot of folks feel the same way by looking at the text line. Our main fear as residents is we feel there is an underbelly to this system. Like, we know there is an effort to make, Kirkpatrick look inept. Not everyone in the security is on the same page, and they thank the Attorney General for getting involved. And I talked about that yesterday, and we'll talk about that with Raphael Goyeneche coming up in the 12 o'clock hour. In fact, that'll be our lead-off topic about his thoughts about where we are. There's been this move afoot in the national media and others, you know, saying that that she has to go. What was revealed yesterday, and I looked at the meeting, the council meeting yesterday, is, you know, Chief Kirkpatrick, I think, appropriately said, you know, outlined that she believes in transparency. She will answer all these questions, but not today. The investigation is underway, and we will cooperate with the multitude of investigations. And this is a time of high emotions, a time of leadership, and a time in need for stability. And she went on to say, I will not resign. And she announced that there's going to be a presser this afternoon where she will engage the services of Bill Bratton, former chief of NYPD as well as LAPD. And she very much believes that this process is a community endeavor. So we will be right back after the break. Stay with us.